Welcome to The Essential Element, the Elements of Education podcast. I'm Christian Page, and what we're here to do is to change the face of public education. Thank you for tuning in. We know that you could have been anywhere else in the world, but you chose to spend your time with us, sharpening your tools. We know that if you're tuning in today, that you're in alignment and on brand with what it is that we're trying to do. We're here to build relationship with our students, to build a relationship with each other, to build a relationship with our families, and build a relationship with our community. And we know that the essential element is honoring all of our human nature and mentoring and building relationships with young people. Today we get the opportunity to have a conversation with Tristan Town, who's one of our teachers at SOTA. Tristan has a wide range of education experiences in a lot of different regions, and she came to SOTA during the pandemic. Tristan is an awesome teacher, teaches a wide range of English classes, and really leans into the idea of bringing students' experience, their lived experience, into the English classroom. Tristan has a background in theater, is interested in bringing education to life, and uses her lived experience in the classroom while allowing students to incorporate themselves into English as well. It's not really about just writing for Tristan, right? But how do we share stories? How do we share our lives? How do we bring our identities and lived experience into the classroom so English doesn't feel like something that's boring or tedious, but it's something, right, that comes to life? And so this conversation with Tristan has been one of my favorites thus far. She is an amazing human being, is vulnerable and open about her practice, about becoming the educator she's been today, and what that's meant through her timeline of teaching. So without further ado, our interview with Tristan Town.
Our school, we really believe in relationships, and that is emphasized through a mentor group. And so I wholeheartedly believe in that.
What do they need? I have to be able to answer that question. Yeah. And that takes a little bit of time.
The biggest teacher, I think, is failure. The brain works in failure. And those failures are actually synapses rewiring themselves in your brain.
And think about where you want to be. Because when you find your place, you find your people. And our purpose is attached to people.
You know, when there's a phenomenal teacher, when there's a phenomenal educator, when there's a phenomenal mentor, one of the mistakes that we make is we make it look too easy. Like, everyone sees the shining moment on stage. No one sees, right, like, the hard time spent.
All right, man. I'm extra giddy, and I have to contain myself. So you are Tristan Town Dyer.
Yeah.
You're an amazing teacher at SOTA. And I want to say thank you for taking the time to be with me, to sit down, to be in community together. You are one of my favorite people when it comes to how your brain works, how you love on students, how you show up in the classroom. And so as I sit over here and be your fan, I'm also excited to have an awesome conversation with you. So for our viewers, for folks who don't know, right, all of the awesomeness that is you, tell us about you, right? We know that you're a human before you are an educator. You're a person before you're a teacher. And I'm sure that there's a story behind why you chose education. So as far back as you'd like to take us, tell us who Tristan Town Dyer is.
Wow. First of all, I'm honored to be here, and I completely concur. Like, I love our conversations and the way your mind works, and you inspire me. I love that you are doing this, and so it's just, it's my honor to be here. I didn't start out wanting to be an educator. I think that's the story for a lot of people. Maybe some people are like, I'm gonna be a teacher. I was bossy as a kid. My brother will tell you that. But I was definitely theatrical. But mostly just because I like people. I'm a people pleaser. That's kind of where my desire to be in front of an audience came from. Like, when I learned how to make people laugh as a little kid, oh, that was it for me. I was like, oh, yeah. That's like, it fills my soul. Like, laughter and clapping, like anything that I do that gets that response is what I want to do. But it was like, I had to kind of explore it, because too much attention sometimes, and negative attention, was not okay. Like, it was the worst. So it's about approval and things like that. So I had to kind of explore that. So theater was my thing. I even majored in it. And University of Georgia, My dad was not super happy about the switch from broadcast journalism to theater, but because he's like, well, what are you going to do with it? I'm like, oh, I'll figure it out. Strong-willed child from the get. But I definitely saw myself going into performing arts. So I was working in film, working in theater, meeting people, making friends in like local community stuff. I got an agent. I went to LA for a year, tried it there, did some extra work, whatever. LA's not for me. Even though I have family and stuff there, I was just like, LA is just too much. And then Atlanta had a burgeoning thing, so I went back to Atlanta and did performing arts. I had an agent for a little while and dabbled in that. But what happened was I took improv and I was really, really good in front of audiences. And kind of all of that was alleviated, you know, that the nervousness about like having an audience was like, I can handle it. So when I was nearing 28 and I was having that conversation with my agent, like, you know, you won't be an ingenue anymore. What are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I'm going to teach, obviously, because I have all these other things that I'm good at. Like, I'm a really good writer. I've done script writing. I've done, I've been all these different things on set, you know, like tried different things in theater, tried different things with school. Like, I had done competitions for like writing songs and writing poetry, and you know, there were all these things that I dabbled in because like there was nothing I wasn't willing to try. That's just kind of my adventure, right? So, but having always been a really good student, people pleaser, you know, and I wanted to drive that car that, you know, Dad said if I didn't have the grades, I wouldn't drive it. So I gotta have the grades if I wanna drive a car. But I was good at school and I love learning. So it was like, well, teaching would be a lot of fun. It would be fun to be a teacher. So I took a test and didn't ever take an education class. And I got into a job at the high school that was next door to the one I grew up in. And that was a really cool launch for me. It was just like, wow, now I have a captive audience, like six periods a day. And I started out teaching seniors. And so I used my theater experience to teach English. And I was like, what better lens to understand words than the performativity of them? Because like, it's very like physically functional. Like our communication has like an embodiment in like how we show up for each other and how we dress and how we, you know, how we relate to each other, like how we judge each other based on, you know, little things like what conversation with a person that we were just having, like assumptions that we make just based on like a shirt you're wearing, whatever. Like we make a lot of assumptions, but like that's communication. So I wanted them to notice all of these things. So a lot of my approach as a teacher was like, how do you relate to people? And how do you explain that? And like, let's write about it. Let's talk about it. So I came at English really rebelliously. They gave me a textbook for British Lit and I was like, how much of that do I have to do? Like, what's the bare minimum? like I'm asking my peers literally, like, am I gonna like get fired if I don't teach this all the time? And so like right off the bat, my department head was like, oh, you're that person. Okay. So that's great. And I love that. And I was also very rebellious. So we'll get along just fine. But like, you do have to teach a certain amount of curriculum to standards, but like, this textbook maybe not so much, it's just what we have. And I was like, okay. So I would just kind of recreate lessons to be more like relatable to the kids. Because I mean, I didn't know a lot about like psychology and like all of these other things when I first started teaching. I was just like, I want to know the kids. Like, and when I talk to the kids, they're telling me that school is boring. The stuff they're reading is boring. Like, they can't relate to the characters. They can't relate to stuff. And I'm like, I feel that. I 100% understand that. So let's try something different. What do you suggest? Let's take some feedback. And like, we would have discussions about like, what do we want to read? So I'd let them pick a few things to read. And when they got more engagement, you know, like they heard me asking them what they wanted to read, no one had ever asked them that before. And they were like, wow, I actually want to go to your class. I actually feel like you care. Mm. I'm like, well, I do care. Why is that surprising? And for me, I was kind of young and naive. Like, you know, I started teaching in my late 20s, and I just naturally care about people. If I'm going to do something, I really care. So I just was curious, like, where have we failed as adults? Why have we not listened to you before? And what can I do differently? Like, let's have discussions. So, like, literally, we'd have these discussions about a reading, and it would just be candid. Like, they'd be sitting on the tables, in the chairs, whatever. I didn't have a real structured format, and other teachers were like, I hear you're doing things a little weird in there. Can we come and see what you're doing? And I'm like, yeah. And, you know, this is Snellville, Georgia, and it's like a suburb of Atlanta, and it's, you know, some people are kind of small townish and have always done things the same way. And a lot of the teachers that were there had been teachers for a long time, like old guard kind of teachers. So the kids would tell me everything, including things like teachers that just were intolerant. And it really was like, that's not okay. I don't know what I can do about it, but I don't feel like you all feel valuable. And that's something I want you to tell me more about. So we would write about it, we would talk about it, we would read some things. I even got them reading Shakespeare. I got them excited about Shakespeare because I had taken so many acting classes in Shakespeare, and I would get up and do like some readings and act them out. And they were like, as long as you keep doing it like that, just keep entertaining us, because you're way better at it than, like, the book is boring, but when you do it, it's really funny. And I'm like, because it's supposed to live. It's not supposed to be on a page, just like every poem. So we would get them up and talk through them, and then like talk through the meaning, and then have them read them out loud. They're like, whoa, that was in there all the time? And I'm like, yeah, words aren't meant to live in paper. They're meant to be alive. And so I'm really grateful that the performer in me made me grapple with language. I'm also really, you know this about me, I'm very philosophical and very like, I always want to know why. Why do we do things a certain way? So like, why does language operate in the way that it does? Like, why does, you know, why did people write things the way that they did? Like, what were we trying to do? So like, theater, like, we're telling stories about humans so we can understand humans better. But like, if I'm going to be performing a part, like, I need to understand psychology. Like, I need to understand what motivates people. Like, I need to understand what, like, what did the author really want me to see? Like, what, you know, question all of those things. And so I would just demonstrate it, and then we would laugh, and then the kids would demonstrate like their questions. And so by the time they left, they were like, I actually had fun in English. Like, how did you trick us into having fun? And it was just kind of like, because I'm having fun. I'm like a fun person. I told you guys, I like to have fun, and I only learn if I'm having fun. So if we're having fun and we're kind of like getting up on our feet and like doing things that maybe are uncomfortable in ways that we maybe didn't think about before. I mean, I don't know. That was the way it started out. And then, so theater's always been a part of my teaching. And, you know, obviously I've been a theater teacher as well, so that fits a lot. But all of my theater experience is a part of my teaching approach. But really, I'm a student of life, and I'm interested in majoring in everything. So if somebody really wanted to pay me to do my dream thing, it would be to go to college in every major for the rest of my life, so that by the time I'm, you know, on my deathbed, like, I'm finishing a PhD in like the 18th different degree. You know, I want to know everything.
Yeah.
I'll never know everything, and I know that.
A noble pursuit though, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, as long as there's breath in my body, I'm going to learn. So I guess that just keeps me curious, childlike, and I want them to keep that alive for themselves, like, because I know nothing more than the adult world will suck that away from you, like, just vacuum all of the passion of your life away from you, you know, really fast. And that's so sad and disappointing to see it happen to young people.
Yeah.
Like, when COVID happened, like, just sad, you know, like, what about cultivating something at home? Like, what do you do? But then you have to worry about what is going on at home. And I never worry about the kids outside of the adults. It's the adults that I'm really worried about, because they're supposed to be adults caring for these kids. And that's not always the case, because the adults have need for care. And
Oh man. So I always like, again, love hearing you talk, love hearing you process through things. And I think one of the things that I admire a lot about you, right, is like, you're not afraid of your strengths, right? And you bring them into the room, right? Like naming something that can be as boring as, or perceived as boring as English, right? And right, speaking from a person who is trying to teach people about words as well, mm-hmm. right? Students can take that home as boring, but to hear, right? Like, I was a theater major, and I love making this fun, and I love words jumping off the page, and yeah. right, and I'm open to different ideas and being creative, and like it sounds like all of that has bled into your practice.
Yeah.
And I love the saying all the time is that like we can only teach who we are.
Yeah.
Right, and so like for you to bring yourself in the classroom in that way, I think is really awesome. And I'm also thinking about right, like because I know if you've done that for yourself. Right. If you know what your strengths are, you lean on your strengths, you let them show up in the classroom, you're vulnerable and open with them. Right. Like, how do you do the same for students? Like, how do you allow them to build on their strengths in your classroom?
I encourage them to fail openly. I don't know. Like, or at least be okay with it. Like, I have this, I have conversation with kids all the time about their perceived notions of what they're supposed to achieve. Like, their expectations that are like projected on them, or like what they think they're supposed to do. And that comes from me knowing that I've had to detach myself from things that were projected onto me. You know, like I want to be authentic and I want them to be authentic. And the biggest teacher, I think, is failure. And like I learned that in, I did a summer program at UW in engineering. Engineering is all about failure. If you don't fail, you don't fix it. And the brain works in failure. And those failures are actually synapses rewiring themselves in your brain. Mm. It feels uncomfortable because your brain is literally undoing a synapse and then redoing a synapse to understand something in new light. And most of us don't attribute that discomfort to something physical, but it literally is your brain. And so I'm like, tell me about how it feels to fear that failure, and like what's the worst thing that could happen? And they're like, I mean, I could humiliate myself. And I'm like, in front of who? You got people in here that have failed many times.
Yeah.
I mean, you know these people. Is that the worst thing that could happen? No, I mean, I guess I could be a disappointment to somebody. And I'm like, for just a moment or forever? Mm-hmm. Like, how long does that last? For yourself? Who's it for? Like, what are we doing this for? I mean, we have to allow our space to grow, right? Like, I think that's, it's hard because we put so much pressure on ourselves. And that, for me, what I want to be for kids is for them to feel like they can show up as themselves and go through that process without fear of, like, what might happen. But, like, accept that it's part of their learning. You know, and grow from it and like be like, wow, look what I just did, and then celebrate it, you know, like never miss an opportunity to celebrate a little tiny success, you know, because that's not little, you know, it's really big. So like I think, I mean, my philosophy has always been I have to know a kid really well, like to know how their mind works, like to see if they're even questioning. And if they're not questioning, how can I get them to start? To get them to think about things a little more maybe methodically and authentically. Like not through a lens of conditioning, social conditioning, but through a lens of what's my truth? What am I here to do? Like what's my life really gonna be about? Like I get this opportunity to be here and learn. What am I gonna do with it? You know, and then, you know, why do I care? Who do I care about? Who's it for? And my thing is always bring it back to them. And I'm like, the only person that's going to be there your entire life is you. Mm. Like from beginning of your life to end of your life, like there's going to be a lot of people that come and go, but you're going to be there. You're the person that you owe the best relationship. And so how can I help you get to know that? You know, like that's where you need to be. And you can do that through learning any subject, right? Like, I don't care what you're learning. Like, you learn a lot about yourself just navigating, like walking down the street, you know, like how am I getting from point A to point B? Like, that you, if you're really thinking about it, or at least being mindful, careful to honor how you really feel, mm-hmm. and not bypass, you know, to like suit somebody else's desires. I mean, that's really hard. So I don't know. That's what I want to be. I want to be a safe place for kids to go through their process of learning. And yeah. I mean, I think that's bottom line. Like my philosophy is do no harm or do as little as possible. And if I can help, then I've done my job. You know?
I love that. And I hear you like, you know, leaning into this idea of mentorship, but not mentorship in the sense of like I have all of the answers, right, and come get them from me. But like I have really great questions, mm-hmm. that can help you be self-reflective.
Yeah.
And I, metaphor, are you ready? Right?
Like, ready, I'm ready.
English class. But no, like this idea all the time of like caterpillar to butterfly, right, is something that consistently is in my mind, particularly when I'm working with students.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, is there, I hear you mentioning this idea of like safe adults or being a safe place or doing no harm. And I've literally heard students say, right, like, no, I need to spend some time with my safe adults today to help me get grounded, mm-hmm. right? And they're talking about you. And so I'm really curious, is there like a story that you have in your pocket? I mean, you've been teaching for a while now of like, you know, watching a student or a series of students go from, you know, right, like caterpillar of trying to figure this out and not knowing what questions to answer to walking away with at least enough to fly.
Oh man, I have so many stories. It goes back to when I first started teaching. And I'm not sure what it is. I think I'm just such an empathic, like empathetic person. Like my assumption is that I don't know what's best for you, but you do. Mm. I've never been somebody who assumed that I knew better than anybody else and that I had the answers. I have a lot of good ideas, but I know that they do too. And I want to know about their ideas. I could tell you my ideas. I could sit and talk to myself all day, but I have all of these beautiful humans that have these new ideas. And that's the beauty of youth, right? Like, they're seeing the world through a fresh set of eyes. Hopefully not too jaded yet. Which, you know, when they come feeling like they can't show up safely. And that happened when I was teaching at this high school in outside of Atlanta. You know, I had a whole group of girls, basketball players, many of them lesbians, who didn't feel safe anywhere else. And they wanted to have a place, and they knew in my room they were safe. I mean, we did have a GSA or what, something like it, which was kind of under wraps because people in Snellville, Georgia didn't get it yet. You know, this is still, it was 2006, 2007, but still it was like, you know, suburban Georgia. I say that with that tone because I can't really help it. I have some feelings about it, but they just wanted a place to hang out after school between, you know, school and practice. And they were like, can we come to your room? And I'm like, well, yeah. What do you want to do? You want to come do homework? Do you want to? And they're like, we'll organize your room. We'll do whatever. We just want a space. And a lot of them would explain, like, they needed to feel safe somewhere. They just needed, like, they didn't really have a lot of ways to communicate it. But I kind of figured out over time that, like, okay, y'all are here because you need to be yourself somewhere. And you can show up here exactly as you are. Like, I'm not judging you. I'm not trying to change you. We're just having funny conversations about, like, how was your day? What did you learn? Did you get any good, like, they were like, oh, I got a good roast in today. Or like, oh, I did a good thing for this one teacher. Or I did, like, I helped this and this. And like, they just wanted to talk. Mm-hmm. But really, they just wanted to be heard. And it started to be a thing. And it made me pay attention to the kids who felt voiceless or like unvalidated. So I started paying attention to that a lot. And they were, you know, they were grateful to have a space. And that was something that the principal of the school noticed pretty quickly. She's like, how do you build relationships with these kids? Like, you're not like, they don't think of you as a friend. They actually, they want to help in your classroom. They want to do better and be better. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, giving a shit? Sorry, am I? So I was like, I think that's it. Like, I just care about them and don't want them to be getting in trouble after school, because they said, like, I could get caught up. You know, I don't want to get caught up after school between now and I got to walk to this gym to, you know, and like, there's these people out there that will, like, pressure me into getting in trouble. And I don't, if I can stay here and then get to the gym real fast, I don't have time. And when they finally explained that to me, I'm like, I respect that.
Yeah.
So since I respect you, let's find something fun for you to do while you're in here. And they, you know, they made my bulletin boards and like cut things out and they like draw pictures and like, they started a little club, like the Be Kind Club. Like, they would do nice things for other kids. And they did that though. Like, I'm not over here going, you guys should do that. It's just conversations we're having where I'm getting to know them and I'm like, why don't you make that happen? That was your idea. And like, they felt, you know, so that kind of, when kids tell other kids, there's a teacher at the school that isn't trying to come down on you, isn't trying to, you know, be about your business and like boss you around. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not a bossy person. I'm just much more like, tell me who you are and tell me why. And what are you going to do later? You know, like with life, where are you headed? And have you thought about this? And, you know, I think a lot of kids that I'm still in touch with have told me over the years, like, you actually listened to me when nobody else would. And I'm like, well, I'm really grateful that you talked to me then. Like, that's cool. Of course, I'm honored that I got to do that. But that's my feeling, is like, when people spend time with me, I'm honoring their time the way that they're honoring my time. Like, you don't have to come to school.
Yeah.
You could go and do whatever you want, but you're here. So I'm honored that you would be here. And I would always say thank you. You know, it's just part of my approach. Like, I'm just not, maybe it's my upbringing too. There's a little bit of the Southerness still in there. Just like, you know, the please and thank you and yes, ma'am, no, sir, whatever. Like, there's a little bit of that still in there. That's a little respect, but I'm respectful of young people in the same way. Like, yeah. I didn't expect them to owe me more respect. My question to them was like, what do you need from me to respect me? And what do I owe you? Mm. Like, what can I give you so you feel respected? And they're just like, no adults ask us these questions, town. We don't even know how to, like, what are we supposed to do with that? And I'm like, think about it. There are plenty of opportunities for you to ask for respect. And then we talk about ways to get it from people. You know, like, there's better ways than others. And that's why we're in English class. Like, let's communicate how to get respect. And it's not the ways that many people think.
Yeah.
You know, like, nobody owes anybody anything, really. But it's nice when, I don't know, like, I just remember teachers that honored my time and spent extra working with me.
Yeah.
And that made me feel understood and seen, and like, that feeling is really nice. So I just draw from my own experience, and I'm like, well, I would like it if somebody did that, so I'm going to go from that approach. So it's just, yeah. And I think the more authentically I show up, you know, the kids now know me well enough to know when, like, something's up.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm stressed, they're like, are you okay? I'm like, you know, you caught me. I'm not. Like, I'm stressed today.
Yeah.
But maybe we could sit down and, like, breathe through it. And they're like, yeah, let's breathe. Let's do it. And they want to help me.
Yeah.
But it's because, like, they know that when they're having that day, I'm like, let's chill. Let's sit. Let's walk around the building. Let's, like, breathe together. Let's see what's going on. So they reversed that, and you know, and I'm like, I'm the luckiest. Like, why would this young person? But I know how young people are. Yeah. They care, and they're very loving, and they're so like thoughtful, and like they want to help. They want to help adults too. Sometimes they just don't know how.
Yeah.
So like sometimes just allowing them to help helps them. So a lot of adults won't let young people help because it's like a barrier. Like, no, I can't. I don't need your help. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can do it myself. I don't need your help. Like, you just go do what you have to do. And it's like, well, think about the opportunity that you just missed, you know, to be a little bit more vulnerable and be like, you know what? I do need help.
Oh.
And what are your ideas? Where could that go wrong?
Damn. Ooh, that piece is so good, right? Because like vulnerability, right? Are the opposite of vulnerability, right? Like when you pretend to play, you know, superhuman, you know what I mean? There's never a place for anybody to step in for you.
Right.
And I love, man.
So fake though. It's like stilted and like disingenuous and all of the things that I dislike.
Yeah, right? There's no relationship that can occur from that.
Yeah.
And I hear you like from all the way around, right? Like talking about this idea of empathy. Right, like this is how I felt when I was a student. This is how I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what my motives were. I knew that I wanted to help adults, and like providing students with space to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Here you've been able to name, right, like, and we've created a community where that's normalized, so much so that people feel when I'm off, right, mm-hmm. that they can step in and aid me,
yeah.
right? I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, like at the beginning of this, we talked about like cognitively, you know, like pushing students, mm-hmm. asking those questions of self-reflection for the long run, right? Like not the finite short term, this is done for the summative, right? Like what is the long question that we have to answer in order to exist better?
Right.
And I'm wondering about this last piece, right? Because we've walked around the circle, like this idea of balance. Right, I think as adults, especially as educators, like we honor this the least. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest pieces of balance is stopping and being reflective. So I'm gonna make an assumption, and you tell me if I'm off, but you haven't always been this awesome in the classroom.
Oh,
right?
No.
There's like learning that's had to occur on the way. There's things that you've had to try, and you even named, right? Like, mm-hmm. I've had to fail. I've had my synapses need to be rewired, right? So I'm curious of like, in your practice in the classroom, right, we always have the continuous improvement stuff and the oh, surveys yeah. and all of these things. Like, all of them operate on the same premise, right? There's something, if I notice a gap, there's something I have to start doing, right? If I notice that something's not serving me, there's something I have to stop doing. And if I realize that something is, you know, kind of working, but it can go from good to great, right? There's something that I might need to amplify. And I'm curious in your practice, like along the journey, have you realized like maybe something that you needed to start doing that has now become great for you?
Oh gosh, tons of things. So I'm grateful to talk about like, I mean, self-reflection is something that I've always kind of done, but like there've been years where I was just too overwhelmed. Like, you know, sometimes years are more stressful than others or whatever. And like, or I was just too worried about what I was supposed to do. Hmm. And I think, in my early teaching, like I didn't accomplish as much as a teacher because I felt I was not accomplishing as much as a teacher like as I should have, because it was a lot and it was overwhelming. Like I have ADHD, and I wasn't diagnosed until later. Like I didn't start therapy until later in life. But a lot of the things that I see students go through, like perfectionism, these ideas of like it's not enough, like it's never enough, so I'm not gonna try it, like I'm overwhelmed, I'm too stimulated, I can't. That was me. Like, I just was like, I would get overwhelmed and shut down, or I would get sick because I'd be just like, I can't deal with this stress. But it's just my brain, like, that's overstimulated and like too, like I see all of these things and I'm like, how do I organize that? So I, you know, I've had to learn over time that like, what I'm not good at. Like, I'm not a naturally organized person. My students will tell you that. Like, I am not a naturally organized person. So like, I have to have help. Like, I have to sit down and like strategically try to like put things in a certain order. And like, I have tried and failed through many systems to keep organized. You know, I have a system right now that helps a lot, but like, literally what helps me the most is like, I have a mindfulness practice. Mm. I have these tools that I now use through like years of working with a therapist and like just daily, you know, kind of spiritually grounding activities that I have to do to just keep my mind at a, you know, a balanced vibration, right? So that I can just kind of move through without like going too fast or like too slow or just the right pace. And that's me staying out of my head and judging myself and getting caught up and tripping on like self-doubt and did I do that and oh my gosh and you know all of those thoughts that like really burden, like a major burden, like oh my gosh, I'm failing all of these kids, like I didn't even get to this unit, I didn't do the, and then I would just feel like all of their grades were my fault and like I would just, I had so many like crying fits, just being like I am not a good teacher, and I would hear like these other teachers, like all their kids are getting these great test scores and things like that, and I'm like, my kids did okay, but like we were focused more on other things, and so I felt like, am I failing the kids because I'm leaning a little more into like hearing them talk and like understanding them more? So I kind of had to go, well, I have to be able to balance. You know, they do need to get something out of the academics. You know, like there is something here for that, but I can still be the other thing. But that's a matter of me being okay right here. Like the weather in the core here has to be calm, but that's up to me.
Yeah.
Like I have to do that work. But I didn't know that for a long time, you know, being young and whatever, and like I was just so full of ideas and energy, it was just kind of a tornado, like a lot of times. So I had to kind of learn to take that energy and, you know, dial it down a little, like keep it under control. So when I see kids that have a lot of frenetic, like either just their mind works really fast and they don't know how to slow it, or they're just very all over the place, I'm like, feel you, I do. So then I just want them to talk about it. So I'm like, you know, I'm an external processor, so want to try to talk about it out here so we can pull some ideas out of it and maybe understand it a little better. And then sometimes they try my process, and sometimes they're more introverted and they need more time to write. But like once we figure that out, like that's what I needed. Like I needed to have a process to overcome, you know, days where I shut down, like days where I was like, I can't do this. You know, like I know what that feels like. And yeah, I mean, a lot of my tools that I have now are because I didn't have any, you know, like as a young person, like I didn't have the ability to just sit and breathe and like get in my body and like get out of my head. But I have tools now that work for me. I had to try so many to get to that point. But I speak very candidly with the kids about like how I came to it. I tell them about being neurodivergent and that I had a late diagnosis and I never was medicated, but like I know that it's hard and it slows you down, but that your head is actually, you're literally battling your thinking. But you can manage it. I'm living proof. You can be successful no matter what your brain is doing. You just have to really understand how your brain works. And I think that's why truth to me and being like authentic to who I am after, you know, years of healing, right? Like I consider that my number one priority is like I'm on a journey of healing, you know, and like what I want for everyone is the same. You know, like all I want for anybody is to feel a sense of authenticity and healing, right? So like, that's what I bring. I'm like, I want that energy to, as much as I can do. Like, and I understand that like I can only do so much. But I think that having gone through some emotional turmoil of like a self journey, you know, battling myself and my own shortcomings, like facing them head on, is the only way I've come to where I am now, where I'm like, well, I can't, now I'm like, I don't think there's anything that you could throw at me that I can't take.
Oh.
Which is, you know, like we were saying earlier, like you have made it this far, right? Like 100% of the things that have been thrown at you, you survived.
Yeah.
And like, I've said that to myself in the mirror many times. I'm like, all of the things that could have stopped you didn't. All of the things that your brain told you you couldn't do, you did it. You made it. You've been successful at all the things you tried, and the things that you failed weren't for you. And you're still here and exactly who you were meant to be. That's really remarkable.
Yeah.
But I'm not alone. And that's the thing, is like, I just want young people to see that. Like, you are like at a really high success rate. You survived a pandemic. Like, you just made it through, or have been making it through, one of the worst periods in recent history. And you're here to tell about it. Like, if that doesn't give you a sense of strength, I mean, I don't know what will. But I don't know. I'm pretty open about my how I came to where I am with pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
So.
I hear that. So, like, the start on this, right? Like, is learning balance, learning to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Learning to understand your own thinking.
Yeah.
Right, and I love that. Like, there's a necessity for self-awareness. And I love that you use the term healing, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, I heard a poet say this recently. They said, I want to test the theory that if hurting people hurt people, then do healing people heal people? And I'm like, oh, man, that's so awesome yeah. for you to give permission to other people, you know what I mean, to stop and to think, right? And to become aware and to breathe and to stop overthinking and to stop doing all of those things. So I hear you both on start, right, and stop. Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, my last question for you in thinking about this, right, is that amplify and continue. And I want you to know this as, right, like, you have a student teacher who's with you now. Mm-hmm. You're in community with folks who the world would consider, like, novice teachers, right? What's the practice that you've held on to that should be amplified, that would serve folks, right, like adults who maybe you're mentoring the best in their education practice? What would be the thing that they should amplify from your practice that would end up being best for them?
Oh. There's a couple things that I always do. But for me, it's, I really need to know the people in my classroom, my colleagues, the leadership team. Like, I'm big on relationship. And that was my philosophy coming into teaching, is that, like, there is no teaching a person who doesn't have an investment in you. And I am not owed any investment just because of a title. Like, that's just meaningless. Like, a title is meaningless until I've earned it. So a relationship is the bottom line. And that, so for me, I do a lot of work really trying to find something in, like, each person, you know, like something that I can draw out of them a little bit, or something they're interested in to get them talking more, or, like, just show up for them, like, about their interests and bring up something that I heard them talking about. Or, like, I really just try to lean in and be present enough to learn about the people. Like, what is it about this person that really makes them tick, you know? How am I going to evaluate anything they write if I don't know anything about them? That's not fair. It's not a fair perspective. But I feel like that's the same for anyone. Like, any job you do, you know, whatever it is, if you want to make your day easier, relationships easier, be curious about what drives other people, like, what, who they are, like, what they love, you know, be open to hearing their stories and, like, encouraging them to share. Like, it's a really cool way to make any job better. Just caring about people. Because we're all here doing jobs about, for, and with people. Like, I mean, you could work in a factory, but you're in there with people until the machines take over our jobs, in which case, then there's got to be people who aggregate the data and then do some interpreting for the AI and the robots. So there's still going to be people.
Yeah.
And then people need to understand how the machines work, which were designed by people. So the more you understand about people, I think that's it. Like, I'm just like, I think you really need to understand people. That's my big focus.
Thank you. Thank you for all that you've shared today. Thank you for just like being cool enough to come and hang out with me for a little while.
Thanks for asking.
But really, like, I know that we say this to different folks and different personnel in different places, but I really, I thank you for your service, right? And everything that you bring to the classroom, that you bring to people, that you bring to our community. And as evidence, I tell this to the poets in the room, right? When the audience gives you words of affirmation, believe them. And so as evidenced by the things that people in our community say about you, right? You're amazing. So grateful to have spent some time with you. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, most definitely. And I look forward to more conversations in the future.
Yeah, you know it.
All right.
Elements of Education is a 501c3 nonprofit organization based in Tacoma, Washington. We're dedicated to changing public education to better serve the diverse needs of students by focusing on our core values of empathy, community, balance, and thinking. For more information about the work that we do, please visit elementsofed.org, or you can follow us on Instagram at elementsofeducation.